will meet the Dalai Lama next week. In announcing the meeting, the government delicately described the Tibetan monk as a spiritual leader rather than a political one. That description wasn't enough to stop the Chinese embassy in Ottawa from describing the meeting as a drastic departure from Canada's policy towards Tibet and raising fears of economic reprisals from the Asian superpower. Charles Burton is a professor of political science specializing in China at Brock University. Good afternoon.
Hi.
How might this meeting affect Canada's relationship with China?
Well, I'm hoping it won't have much of an impact. I don't expect that the Chinese would adopt extreme measures like trade sanctions. They might try and retaliate in terms of interfering with our development projects in Tibet. Canada does some poverty alleviation and some agricultural projects there to help the people out, and we need permission from Beijing to go there. And so that kind of retaliation is conceivable, but I'm hoping that we won't see any retaliation at all. I think China's a much more confident member of the world community, and I think a meeting between Paul Martin and the Dalai Lama is a rather minor event in the greater scheme of things from their point of view.
Why is China making any waves at all then about this visit?
Well, they don't want the Dalai Lama to gain prestige as a legitimate political leader. So our Prime Minister's office has gone through this song and dance that Mr. Martin just wants to meet him for discussions of spiritual matters, and so we're not acknowledging that he has a political role to play. But I think that really the reason that Mr. Martin is meeting with the Dalai Lama is because Canadians have a lot of concern about the plight of Tibetans in Tibet, and they want him to meet with the Dalai Lama to express that the Canadians stand with the Dalai Lama in what he believes is right for the people in that region.
There have been other similar meetings. The Dalai Lama has met recently with Tony Blair, George Bush. Do these meetings have any political effect for Tibet?
I don't think that they've had a direct and sort of observable effect. I guess it does indicate to the Chinese that the eyes of important leaders of the world are on Tibetans, and so this might cause them to be somewhat moderated in their policy. But these things are very hard to assess.
So then if there hasn't been any real fallout, then why are these world leaders bothering?
Why do they meet with the
Dalai
Lama? Well, I think it's a spiritual and symbolic kind of thing. People want their leaders to acknowledge the Dalai Lama as a great person in the world, and someone who is representing the aspirations of a people who are suffering from oppression. And so I think that it's a symbolic kind of meeting, not really anything of substance. I don't think that these world leaders have much in the way of substantive issues to discuss with the Dalai Lama, because the Dalai Lama is not politically in charge of anything but the Tibetan government in exile in India.
Now, the Dalai Lama has changed his rhetoric recently regarding Tibet's relationship with China. Why is that?
Well, I think that it's a more realistic sort of stance. He's not calling for an independent Tibet with its own seat in the UN and its own flag. He's saying that he would like the Tibet Autonomous Region to be genuinely autonomous, that Tibetans should be in charge of the domestic affairs of Tibet, but that China could continue to look after foreign and defense policy, so Tibet would stay inside China. The Chinese aren't having any part of this, and they simply see this as a means for the Dalai Lama to gain advantage so that he can continue his plans for independence.
And what is he wanting for Tibet now?
Well, I think that he would like a government of Tibet that would respect Tibetan cultural norms, but he's not calling for the Chinese to withdraw. You know, there are problems in Tibet of a nature of how you transmit the traditional Tibetan culture. The Chinese government is not allowing as many Tibetans to go into monastic training as would like to, and there's problems in higher levels of education in Tibetan language and culture. And so you have a very sad situation of a culture that's unable to be transmitted to the coming generations because the institutions that would be doing that are being restricted by the Chinese government.
There have been some independent success stories over recent years, East Timor, former Russian states. What would have to change for the Tibetan people to gain more rights?
Well, I think that you'd need to have a Tibetan people that had a consciousness of rights, which would suggest that you need middle-class Tibetans, people who have a sense of citizenship, a sense of rights, including the right to self-determination and the capacity to mobilize into a political force. At this time, you don't have that in Tibet. The Tibetans in Tibet are largely the economic underclass, and such middle class as there is, you know, people that run factories and own shopping centers and so on, tend to be ethnic Chinese. So I can't be too optimistic that we're going to see any kind of change in the Tibetan status quo in the foreseeable future.
And I guess there'd have to be changes in China, too.
Yes, it would have to become a country that was democratic and acknowledged that people have the right to determine their own futures. Present stance of the Chinese government is that, you know, if there was going to be a referendum on independence in Tibet, it would have to involve all of the people of China deciding that Tibet could become independent. They wouldn't just take the views of the people currently resident in Tibet.
Thank you very much for your insight on this.
It's good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Charles Burton is a professor of political science at Brock University.